We're on. Please join me in the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Amen. It is my honor and pleasure to draw this out as long as possible. To introduce to you B, she is our speaker this evening, 40 minutes from San Clemente.
Woo. Hi everybody, I'm B and I'm an alcoholic. That's cute. This is a trip. I'm not nervous, but I am overwhelmed right now. And it's going to be a lot of tissues. Remember, I'll get some more because I'm feeling extremely, there she is, extremely sensitive this evening. I guess because it's my birthday as well, today I turned 17 years old. And, you know, I just can't believe it. I can't believe it for myself because it just doesn't seem like any way, anyhow. Wow. It just doesn't seem like, you know, I've earned like exactly what I have today, you know, my life. I'd like to, you know, start in the beginning and give you a brief account of my childhood and my family. I came from a raging alcoholic home, my father and my siblings, not my mother, but I was raised around alcohol, and my sisters and brothers seemed to be so, there was something wrong with them individually. And I could, like, never really figure out, like, why, you know, one was a prostitute, one was retarded, one took drugs, one was a murderer, you know. And I used to think, how do I fit, you know, how do I fit in this family? What's wrong with me? Because I seem to kind of be pretty cool. But you know what? I was the youngest of eight kids, and I was very sheltered as a child. And I got married very early in life. Well, as a matter of fact, on a Thursday, June 11th, I graduated from high school. And Friday, June 14th, I got married. And Wednesday, June 17th, I had my daughter. So, you know, me and God can really work it. You know, He's got His 7 days and I got mine. But it was, you know, I was thrown into this lifestyle of an adult and a mother and a wife and trying to be responsible all at the same time. And it was a little bit difficult for me because, you know, being that responsible that early in life, I didn't really have a chance to experience, you know, what every teenager would, and I didn't have the fun that they did. I couldn't spend the night at their house because my mom, you know, was like really awesome. My dad took off like a long time ago when I was like 2 years old, but I still remember running from him when he was drunk with a rifle. And I remember being on my mom's side. You know, she was holding me and running away from him with a gun to try to protect us, all of her kids. And I thought it was fun kind of hopping around like that until I really realized that she was trying to save our lives. You know, I didn't get it when I was two. But, you know, growing up, he was found later on, you know, in my life 20 years later. And he had just moved to another place and was just as raging as he always was. But I'm glad I met him. I'm glad to see where I came from, even though it was a turd. But You know, and it didn't matter. I didn't want to have regrets about meeting the man that was responsible for giving, you know, like, birth to me. So anyway, after I got married, my husband decided to join the military, and that's what brought me to California. I was out here when I was 20 years old, and I had the first chance of being away from my parents, you know, or the first chance of being away from my siblings that, no, don't let her hear that, or go to your room, or hide. I'm like, I'm going to be the big girl now, you know, and I started drinking wine because I thought that's how you started. And I drank wine, you know, for a while, and I really did like it. And I thought it was okay to drink wine because I drank Blue Nun. And I thought, you know, like, it's spiritual, right? You know, so this is okay. I had a lot of nun in me, though. I'm telling you, I should have had none, but I got so outrageously drunk, like, right from the beginning, and I liked it. I liked it a lot. And I'm here to confess to you, I never threw up. I never gave my booze back. You know, I was that kind of girl. I liked it till I got the spins, and I was the total blackout drinker, and I liked that too. I didn't have to remember what I did. I didn't have to, you know, be accountable for what I did. Well, you know, as time went by, of course, things got so progressively worse in my life that I, you know, my marriage was coming to an end, and I already, you know, had like two children, and I decided to move to San Clemente. This was like in 78. And let me tell you, the freedom from now, my mom and family, now it was from my husband, because he would bother me like, why do you want to drink on Sunday? I'm like, well, it's Blue Nun. You know, I mean, it seems like this would be a good day. And I did not understand why he wanted me to take days in particular just like not to drink. I didn't understand anything like that because I thought you drank to get drunk. I've never drank because I was thirsty. Never. Well, in sobriety, but, you know, never ate because I was hungry either, but I just knew that there was no rhyme or reason. I hear a lot of people talk about the fact that they drank in moderation, you know, like at first, and I could never really relate to drinking in moderation. I could never think about drinking until I passed out. It just wasn't okay until I passed out. But, you know, the time came when it was, you know, it was like DUI time. And believe me, I qualify to be here because I got my first DUI at a 0.33 blood alcohol content. And it was not wonderful at all to, like, learn what blood alcohol content mean. I didn't know what she said, what she meant when she said 0.33. I'm like, is that bad? You know. She said 33% of your blood was alcohol. And, you know, I was, like, very thin, you know, at the time, very frail, and when I went to court, of course, I had to explain why I could, like, still walk around and be coherent on 0.33 blood alcohol content. And the judge knew, Pamela Isles, see what I'm saying? That's what I'm talking about right there. I know you know who she is, and she really, really had like a big heart on for me. She did not like me, and I didn't know why. Everybody else did, you know, but she just didn't. And So she told me that I had to go and get, I had to take some AA cards, some, I was just looking at this one on the table and it just reminded me of it when I was walking up here. I did not want to get sober. I just didn't want to be sober. I had my court card and I had 90 meetings to go to in 90 days. And I just didn't want to do it. So I know by the time the first week went by that I had just blown the opportunity to get 90 and 90 because I had to go, but she only gave me 95 days to do it in. So I knew after the first week that it would be impossible to do it. So I'm like, well, it's impossible. I may as well just get drunk. So I just got very drunk every day. Like I did, for absolutely no reason. You know, I didn't get drunk for a reason. I don't know about you guys, but if it was sunny, yay, I'm getting drunk. If it was cloudy, oh, it's cloudy, I'm getting drunk. You know, if it was good news, yay, let's party, get drunk. If it was sad, oh, poor me, let's get drunk. You know, so it just didn't matter. Any change of feelings all required getting drunk because that's what I needed to do. That's what I had to do. That's what my body told me to do. That's what my head screamed at me. And my heart, at the same time, told me to get drunk. So I did. I did until I had to go to court the next day and show my signature for 90 meetings in 90 days. So I went to an AA meeting. And it was at the Friendship Center, and it was on a Monday, and I took my court card, and this woman signed it nicely for me, Susan F. She was the secretary of the San Clemente Friendship Center, and I had one, but I had 89 more to go. So I went home and deliberately, stupidly, asininely signed her name for the other 89 signatures as though she was the secretary for every meeting for 3 months. You know? And I didn't even try to find out how, you know, you would do it. I just thought, you know, I mean, in order for me to even have a clue of, like, how it went, I would have to know some of you. You know, I might have to, like, not drink for a day. You know, heaven forbid, I just couldn't have that. I had to stay wet every day. You know, so I made that conscious decision to do that. And what I did was showed up... I showed up the next day, you know, at court, you know, and the clerk just took my three cards, and he just looked down at them, and he's like, you know, I'll be right back. And don't you hate that? Those are the words where either, like, you know, I need to talk to you, or, you know, I'll be right back. I don't like either one of those results. So, of course, he took and, you know, knocked me out to the judge and came back and he said, you know, like, Pamela Isles wants to see you, like, right now. And so I took myself in there and she said, young lady, you know what? You have a big problem. You have a big problem. For one, she lied, though. She said, I called down to that San Clemente Friendship Center, and nobody knows you. You know? And but I didn't know that she was lying, you know? And I'm like, oh, you did? Oh, they did? You didn't find Susan? You know? And so what I had to do was, just take this. She said, I need you to find this woman. I'm going to give you 2 weeks to find this woman and bring her back to say that she signed these cards this many times. And if not, you are in trouble. I can see forgery all in your future. And I was so scared. If I could have got drunk right in front of her right then, I would have sucked it down. But you know what? There was so much fear instilled in me. It was a lot of fear because I could never do the wrong thing and turn out okay. I could never lie. I can't forge. I couldn't do anything. So I was like really on the phone to central office. Do you know Susan F? You know, it's like I really need to, you know, and it's just not how it worked. And it's because I did not befriend you guys. I didn't know how to do this thing. And I was going to do it wrong because I was not interested in finding out anything from you. I just didn't want to. You represent what the whole thing I didn't want. It's like these guys have no freedom. They don't know, you know, they don't have any freedom. They don't know what it's like. I thought being out of my damn mind was freedom. That's what I thought freedom was. But I had to go back to court, and I didn't know what was going to be in front of me, but I bet for 2 weeks I was as drunk as I could possibly get. And I went back to court, and she looked at me and asked me if I bought Susan F. back, and I said, no, I didn't. She goes, well, release your purse to the bailiff. I'm putting you under police custody. And I'm like, what does that mean exactly? You know, because I just didn't get it. I didn't know. She goes, hand your purse. It's like, is he going to search it? She goes, you're under arrest. Like, oh, shit. You know, so I had to that day go to jail. And the thing is, I never for once thought about what my children would do. I never once thought about them trying to eat or just to be at home by themselves. I never thought for 1 minute what I was doing to them. I just thought, I need to save my own ass. And I was just thinking that I don't want to look good in jail and I need to get out. But I was selfish and self-centered. I had to go under police custody. I had to be under police custody. And gratefully, she gave me a choice. She said, you can either spend 10 days in jail or one night in jail. I'm like, I'll take that. She goes, I haven't told you what you have to do. She goes, one night in jail, you'll be out tomorrow, but agree to 18 months of ant abuse. And it's like, I don't know what it is, but I'll just take that. I didn't want to be there. I really didn't. So I agreed to. I took the choice for ant abuse, and I had to spend the night in jail. I had to call my one girlfriend that lives downstairs to have her, like, look after my kids because I couldn't. And so she did, and I did the night, and I got home. I got home the next day, but it was, like, you know, like, really awful, the bus to Santa Ana and the whole booking thing and all that process. I don't know what it takes with those guys that, like, don't mind, that really just, you know, I'll just go. It's like, you know, three meals and a roof over my head. But I just didn't like it. The whole thing was just totally wrong for me. So, you know, I tried to be a little better after that. I didn't give myself as much permission to get drunk, but I still got drunk. I had a month before I started the ant abuse. So I knew then that I had to, you know, start bringing it to a close. And I did, you know, I mean, I really did it. I, like, actually stopped the alcohol for 18 months. Well, 17 and a half, to be honest with you. But I stopped it, and I really felt good. But in my mind, I didn't want to be sober. So I did another substance, you know. I did another drug, because far be it from me to just be clean and sober. Just far be it from me. I didn't want to do that. So I just had fun with this other drug, and, you know, for 18 months, and I took my Anabuse, and I made a fool out of myself in a whole lot of ways doing that, you know, and when the 18 months were up, and mind you, I did feel physically better a little bit, not emotionally, but physically better for the 18 months. And I went to Mexico, and when it was all over, you know, this guy took me to Mexico, and I wind up doing parasailing and peeing all down the whole thing, you know. You know, and peeing was a really big part of my story. I'm telling you, it's like all about the bladder. It's like really awful because, you know what, I would take these men, I would capture these men, they would be my prisoners, and I would pee on them. And I just, you know, and it's not that I really wanted to, but it's like, oh, well, it's coming out, may as well head it at you, you know, and it's just how my body was reacting to, you know, to this drug, you know, like alcohol. And I have, you know, like I said, I was a blackout drinker, so it was nothing to just wake up in a stranger's bed, wet, you know. And that was just like who I was. My girlfriend called me, you know, PPB, you know. And there was like a lot of nicknames and things going on, you know, about me. But I just accepted it, you know. I mean, accept because I'd done my 18 months. I did it, but I was right back in it, but much worse than I was before. Because the nun was not cutting it anymore. So I had to go to vodka, and I started drinking vodka at first with, like, you know, I was introduced to vodka with, you know, a splash of water, you know, on the rocks. And then as time progressed, it's like no water, then later on, no ice, later on, no glass, you know. And I would just buy and suck up this hot vodka all the time. Sometimes a bit of big McDonald's straw in there and just, you know, walk around. I'm talking the family size, you know, with the big grip on it. And that's what I did. And I had one of those every day by myself, you know. And I would drink myself into, I got so sick and tired of the people calling me the next day to tell me what I had done. I got tired of, like, come get your clothes. Or I got tired, do you know what you did to my husband? You know, and then it's like this one guy is like, you know what you did to my wife? You know, and so I had absolutely no boundaries. It didn't matter because I'm sure I peed on her too. You know, but I was really kind of ashamed of myself. But I just didn't know. I just didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to stop it. I didn't know that I needed a desire to, because that was nowhere in sight. That was nowhere on the schedule to, like, stop, you know. And I drank until I just absolutely almost killed myself. I mean, I had a guy bought me a brand new car for Valentine's Day. And I took it on the Ortega Highway after having it 2 days and rolled it and topped it over some trees and bottomed out on a rock, pushed the engine out of it, you know, and I just, like, walked home, you know, and, like, left it there. I was like, well, so much for that, but nice bow. It was a beautiful bow, like, on top. And, you know, I really abused friendships because I peed on so many people. And, you know, and men, I just captured them. And any of my friends, I just, we were not like real friends, you know. They were just with me so that we could party together. But they weren't real friends. And, you know, I remember to this day when I was in Dana Point having to stay at the villa. You remember that old villa hotel? Yeah, I remember, you know, like having to stay there because I had become so irresponsible and I drank and peed all the money away and I had no place to live. I was trying to, you know, dole out the children to their dads. I was, you know, it was awful. And I remember walking down the coast highway, you guys, with three children in tow. And I'll never forget how they told me they were hungry. And I was thinking, if I had money, I would not feed you with it. I would get high, I would get drunk, and I would leave you to somebody that could take care of you. I'm sorry, I love you so much. But that's how I felt. That's really how I felt. And God came into play and did a lot of things for me, what I could not do for myself. And one of them was to take care of my children. And, you know, I'm just really grateful to today of all the blessings that I've got from this program. I had to eventually, from another DUI, you know, I know they were like 7 years apart and it's off your record. Well, 6 years and 11 months and 3 weeks, I got another one. You know, I can't do anything wrong. I can't. It's like, so by this one, I had to go to SB 38 programs, hey buddy, and I had to do all these classes. I had the pee in bottles, and you know, I had women looking at me like, I'm like, do you have to stare? I mean, she's like, honey, this is no walk in the park for me either. You know, I would rather be doing something else than sitting there watching you. And, you know, well, then at least I was peeing in a bottle. She should have been grateful. But I had to do all these programs in order to pull myself out from this second DUI. And I had to go to jail. I had to do 5 days, you know, and I didn't like it, you know, one bit. I didn't want to do that again. And again, I left the kids. Again, I had to just, like, release them to somebody else's love and care because I didn't. And what happened to me? What happened? I want to get into what happened because I like what happened. I was starting not only drinking hot vodka, but I've gone to the 100 proof Stolies. And that's what I drank for the longest time. And I drank up until New Year's Eve. Well, what happened was Christmas Day in 92. I called my mother because, you know, drunk dialing was one of my favorite things. Lord, I love the phone when I get drunk. If I wasn't peeing, I was dialing somebody, you know, and I would dial so like foreign countries so I could hear how they would say hello, you know, and it was all, konnichiwa, pronto, you know, and I was always calling someplace else, you know, and my phone bills were easily $300, you know, a month, and, you know, this was a long time ago when calls were like, you know, a penny a minute or whatever, you know, and I had these horrendous phone bills every month. Well, in that time of me calling, I needed to let somebody know what kind of pain I was in. I needed to call, and even though these foreigners couldn't talk to me or relate to me, it was still like a ear that they would not shoot me down. And I loved it. I loved doing that for some reason. It was a passion. So I would call my mom, though, in those blackouts. I would call her, and I would talk to my mother. And, you know, you guys, I know you know good women, and a lot of you had wonderful mothers, but I never met a woman like my mother. She loved unconditionally. My mother was so gentle and wonderful, and she thought that there was hope for, like, Manson, my mom. She's like, if somebody could just hug him, you know? And she just thought the rapists, the murderers, the pillagers, you know, all they just need is somebody to give them a big hug and just love them. That's all they need, just some love and a good meal. You know, she wanted to feed you all the time. And so this is my mom, you know, and my mom was so firmly rooted in her Christianity that it was great. She never let one problem get to her that she didn't believe that God wouldn't settle. She's like, my God, take care of everything. I don't care what it is. Well, growing up with a mother like that was like really awesome. But when I was drunk and used to call her all the time on Christmas Day of 92, she picked up the phone and I just like start talking to her and she's like, honey, you know what? I love you with all of my heart, but I just can't do this anymore. And she hung up on me. My mom, that kind of virtuous, wonderful woman, hung up on me. And she would not answer the phone again. And my heart was so broken. I don't think ever my heart was so broken. And I just kind of, at that time, remembered that I had to listen to my heart for a change. And my heart wasn't really telling me to drink. My heart was telling me, you're wrong. You need to do something to get right. And for a week, that week after, I tried to drink that feeling away. But there was not enough alcohol in the world to detonate pain from my mom hanging up the phone. And all week long, she would not answer the phone. So what I did was, it was December 31st, and I just got a phone call from my daughter, and she told me that she didn't want to talk to me anymore because I asked her husband over to my house without her. And you know what? I couldn't deny it. I couldn't agree with it, but I had no idea. And I was not beyond anything like that. And I was thinking, how horrible can I be to these poor innocent kids that didn't ask to be in my care? So what I did was I got on a telephone to central office. This time, not looking for Susan F., but this time looking for somebody that I could talk to. Because the pain was so deep. The pain was so deep. It was down to my toes. And the central office said that they would have somebody to call me back. And they did in a very timely manner. She called me about 9:30. And I talked to her for like at least 2 hours. I saw it getting close to 12 o'clock. And I wanted to really celebrate New Year's Eve. You know, there's no reason whatsoever. My life is already in the shit and here I am trying to get higher. But I just wanted to like one last hurrah and just get drunk and just forget the old year. But she wouldn't let me off the telephone. And somewhere in my heart, I didn't want to get off the telephone because she was comforting to me because she just listened. She didn't judge me. She didn't tell me what I was doing wrong. She just goes, I understand. I understand. And so she talked to me past midnight. And when it was getting ready to be 2 in the morning, I'm like, this is almost enough now. Because, you know, the stores are going to be closed in a minute, you know. And I won't be able to, like, sneak out and get. And I just never got a chance to go back out and get any more alcohol. Of course, what I had was already gone, so there was nothing left to pour out. I don't know if I would have ever done that. But the next day, of course, I was in this state of limbo. I was in this state where I wasn't really drunk that night, and I wasn't really sober. I had no peace whatsoever. So I had to, I looked at this phone number that, you know, was on the on a pad right by my bed, and I was like, I wonder what that was. I must have gone drunk dialing and peeing again, but I didn't remember. And as soon as I just, like, couldn't remember, my phone rang. And when the phone rang, I'm telling you, everything came back. I remember for the first time. I never recalled what I did. I never could recall. And for the first time, I remembered I talked to this lady. And I told her I would go to an AA meeting with her. It's like, oh, criminy, what did I do? You know, and so she's like, how do you feel? And I'm going like crap, like I do every hour of the day, 7 days a week, 24/7, you know. And she's like, so are you ready to go to a meeting? And I said, not really, but I told you I would, and I'll go, you know. So here it is, January 1st, you know, and she meets me. No, she picked me up, actually. She picked me up from my place. And we went to Crown Valley somewhere. And she, we went to this meeting, but it was closed. There was, like, no meeting there for some reason. And when I saw it was closed, she goes, yeah, it's, you should have been a lot of people there. I guess they're not going to have it. And I was like, you know, saved again, you know. But what happened is she goes, no, no, no. She goes, I'll just call my husband and have him look on the schedule and a manual and find us another meeting. I'm like, oh, crap, you know. And so she called him, and we got another place. It wasn't very far away. It wasn't far away at all. And so we got there. And I know what I must have looked like, because I looked like crap anyway. I had dry complexion from all that vodka and patches of dry skin, and my hair would like to come out, and, you know, I was just a mess. I was a mess. But I went to this meeting with her, and I walked into that meeting, and when it came to order, we sat down, and it was a woman's meeting. And I looked around the room, and I am telling you the truth. I have never seen such clean, beautiful, sober women all in one place like that in my life. I looked into their eyes, were just twinkling. There's like sparkles just coming from them, and they were talking about how happy they were to be sober. And it's like, these people didn't drink last night, you know. What, how do they do that? And I don't believe that, you know. I could hardly believe it. But for the first moment, I saw something I wanted. For the first time, that's what I want. I want to be like that and have somebody look at me and admire me for a second. That would be just fine. So I stayed at that meeting with her, and I loved it, and I almost didn't want to leave. And I was like crying when it was over. It's like, I need a little more, just a little, you know. It was just like the booze. Give me just a little bit more, you know. And I was so grateful to be at that meeting, you know. And I said that day when they were saying the Serenity Prayer, I heard it that day. I heard the Serenity Prayer like, you know, like it was the first time somebody'd ever said it to me, you know, and I could dig serenity. I wanted to know what that was. I start looking words up in the dictionary, you know, sober and serenity. And they were all things that I really wanted to experience in my life. And that day, God relieved me from my obsession to drink. At that moment, when I was in that meeting with those women and I saw what I wanted, He took the desire to drink away from me. For 20 years outside that, 18 months, I stayed drunk all the time. I was so drunk trying to work and trying to do hair, I couldn't even eat from the DTs. I could not put a spoon to my mouth. I could not get it in my face. I could not function at all. My body was totally rebelling against me, and it wouldn't do anything. And I had a channel. I had a way to actually be a real upstanding woman, you know, and I was just floored. And all of a sudden, this program was like a big magnet, and it was just like, come to me, come to me. And I just like, want to go to meeting. Where's me? Oh, meeting's over here. Over here. I'll go to meeting. There's one tonight. Can we go right? And that's all I wanted to do. And I listened to people, and I really heard you. And I understood what you were trying to like say to me, you know, and I don't know. A lot of things happened, you know, to me and my body. It's like it just started to heal almost at that very moment. And I had a son. His father took him away from me. And of course, reasons to drink were like insurmountable at that time. When he kidnapped him and took him away and I didn't know where in the world he was, I was devastated beyond means. And that just made me drink even more than they could. The liquor stores told me where I lived, we don't have any more vodka. We just don't have any. It's not that we didn't get it. We're out. You know, and they were out because I was out getting it. And, you know, and I could not drink enough. I was on home arrest. At one point, I had this ankle monitor on my ankle. And every time I left my house, my phone would go off. And I was driving everywhere drunk down Oceanside to show my girlfriend what it looked like. And she's all, get out! Get out of here! Oh, what that thing is! You know, she just didn't know what it was. And, you know, I'm thinking back of moments like that, you know, in my life when I was sober, like, you know, I don't have to be that desperate. I don't have to be like that. When I was 3 months sober, I sat down and I had a talk with God about my son. I'm like, I gave birth to him. I needed to know where he was in this world. Because right about now, I'm feeling I can be a good mom. I can be a decent mom. And I can be a good friend. So I got on the telephone one night. It was in March. I got on the telephone and I called Oklahoma and to the operator. And I told them his father's name. And I said, you know, you might want to just let me talk to a supervisor because this may not pan out just like between me and you. I need to talk to somebody that'll understand. So the supervisor got on the telephone and I'm telling you, I told her my testimony. I told her my testimony, how I could not live without knowing whether my son was dead or alive in this country or not. I had absolutely no idea his condition. I told her everything. I'm like, I'm not looking for his father's phone number. I don't want you to give him up. I don't want an address. I just really need to know. and she told me to hold on a minute. That was the only time holding on a minute was worth my time. Because she came back and she said, your son will call you in the morning. He's asleep right now, but he'll call you in the morning. And you know what? I didn't know about being grateful or making amends or anything like that yet. I hadn't quite gotten the program down. I just knew I loved it. But I couldn't thank that woman enough, because the next morning my son, after 4 years, called me and he wanted to come and see me. And I said, if you can come and see me, I'll pay for it. And you just ask your dad. And so he did. He asked his father and he said, yeah, as long as I paid for it. He was a hillbilly, so. I didn't have any money and I didn't know what I was going to do. I was broke. I had worn out my credit like crazy. You know, I owed everybody in the world money. I didn't care. Hadn't cared about paying bills or anything, you know, because I was so busy peeing. But I had gone down that day to, I called and I got a ticket for him to come. It was spring break. And for spring break, I told him he could come for a week. But I got on the internet and I found out a ticket was $253 for him round trip. And I didn't have it. And I got on my knees. And I prayed to God that I don't know what to do. But you know in my heart how much I need to see my son. And, you know, I don't want to sound like some trippy, hallucinating person here, but I went to my mailbox that very day. And I'm self-employed, so I never get money from the government. Never. Never. I just don't. I pay. That's how that works. And I opened my mail to find a check from the government that says they overpaid. I overpaid for 2 years, and it was $253. And I was so humbled by that. I was just so humbled by it. Because how do you say thanks to God? You know? I mean, how do you say thank you? It was just so big and huge for me. But it was great to see him and to touch him and love him and just, you know, I was overbearing. I knew it. I mean, I knew I was and I intended to be. But it was one of the best moments of my life to see my son. And to see all my three kids together. It was absolutely the biggest blessing ever. So I had him for a week. Things worked out for me. A whole lot of things worked out for me. I started becoming of service. I had the woman that sponsored me told me that she was going to be moving to Arizona. On Nevada. She goes, so I'll just be a temporary sponsor. So I said it was okay, but I knew that the steps were vital. I knew how important people said that they were, so I hung around to do the steps. And I did them with her, but I was a big pain in the ass. I would call her about how I drew the lines. Should I draw three or four down? Should I put the headings, like print them or write them? I don't know why I procrastinate to do it, but it really seemed overwhelming. You know, it really seemed overwhelming for me because the only thing I could do really good was drink. You know, that's all I could do really well. And so she just loved me one day at a time. And she showed me how to do one, two, and three. And it was like marginally good, but I couldn't get to four before she left. So I'm sitting here without a sponsor. But little did I know, Lorraine and Larry had been stalking me. And I heard that they sponsored half of Orange County. You know, but she was the most loving and understanding woman. But every time I turned around at a meeting, there she would be. Okay, she would be there. So I did my sponsor, I did my steps with her. And she always wanted to be a hard nose, but she doesn't know how loving she is. And she reminded me a lot of my mother. And she loves me into doing those steps to give me the biggest freedom that I ever had experienced in my life. My life changed 100%. 100. I love every minute of my sobriety. I start having freedom and taking trips and things that I always wanted to do, you know, in my life that I could never, ever do. I went from having that ankle monitor on my ankle to getting a passport and going, you know, to Italy, to Russia, to Africa, to Bora Bora. I've been to Cuba, Jamaica, and I love it. I love, that's my thing. I work hard and I play harder, you know, and I love to do it. I spoke at meetings, you know, in different countries and attend them. And let me tell you how a trip it is to go to an AA meeting in Russia where vodka is just flowy like water. You know, I mean, it's all just like totally different. My life is fabulous. Now I know what freedom is. And now I've had a chance to make amends, all of them that I know. And my living amends to my children is to stay sober forever. And this is where my, I'm so stubborn that I'm not going to drink just because, you know, somebody think I might. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm talking about. You know, so I'm going to enjoy it doing this and just being obstinate, and I'll just keep having birthdays as long as God gives me breath. But this is a spiritual program. Don't take it lightly. Don't take it lightly because, you know, this is all we have is our honest, true thoughts about what is good in those 12 steps. This is all we have to give to other people. And because sometimes I put my hand up for sponsoring, but, you know, I get tired. I get tired, and that's okay. But this is how I can stand here and be of service. And I appreciate it. And I want to thank you so much, Betty, for asking me. This is just big and overwhelming because it's also my birthday day, you know, to do this. But it's an honor to be here. And a privilege to see my daughter visiting from Austin, Texas, and she's in this program too. And it's just awesome. But I just want to leave you with this thought because this is what helped me through. There is one that has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Thank you for my sobriety.